Hello, everybody. Welcome to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. It has been a while since we've been together. And when's the last time we did this, guys?
Man, the band's back together. This is exciting. I don't remember.
I want to say a month, maybe?
It wasn't the All-Star game, right? It wasn't when we were physically together in Los Angeles for the All-Star.
I think we've done at least one or two since then.
Okay. All right. But suddenly, the end of the season is here. I was gone. Jim was gone. Jonathan, I think maybe you've missed a podcast or two in there.
I missed one right after the All-Star break.
Yeah. So it's been a while. And suddenly it's the end of the season. And so today we're going to talk about some of the top prospect performances of 2022. A little sneak preview. One of those top performers is going to be joining us on the show today. Jonathan and Sam Dykstra had a chance to talk to maybe the most exciting prospect in baseball, Ellie De La Cruz. Guys, any opposition to that?
Jackson Churio might be upset with that, but he definitely is on the list of one of the.
I will accept that because if you're just going tool for tool,
just pure exciting.
De La Cruz, yeah. I think has slack because of the difference in arm strength. I think De La Cruz is the most exciting prospect athlete, if that's a term.
Well, if it wasn't, it is now.
It is now.
All right, and we are going to then look ahead to the 2023 draft class. Jonathan has already put together a list of the top high school prospects for the 2023 draft class, a story that went up, a week or two ago, Jonathan?
I think it was last week. Time really has little meaning in general, but especially since I've marked my calendar on us talking together on this podcast. So it was either last week or 3 years ago.
Yeah. I think that of those two options, I'm going to go with last week. And then Jim is working on putting together a similar list for college prospects in the 2023 draft class. That'll be out next week, but we'll give you a little sneak peek at that. And then we will answer a question from the mailbag. All right. So let's start right in on some of the top prospect performances of the year. As we record this, the season is still going on. The postseason for single A and high A just began. And the double A and triple A regular season still underway. But I think we have a pretty good grasp of what the overall top performances of the year have been. We're going to break this down into hitters and pitchers. Jim will discuss, we're kind of winging it here, a hitter or two, Jonathan as well, and then pitchers. And I talked to Jim a little bit about this yesterday because the Pipeline newsletter for this week is going to feature some of these top performances. As Jim, did you rank them or did you?
I did not rank them. I put them in alphabetical order, but
that's weak.
That is weak.
I didn't want to steal the thunder from the podcast. Well,
you know, that's post vacation.
No, it's like
right
it's one of these things you can't really rank per se. But
sure,
well, that's
you can.
True. But I do. If you want to ask me who I think had the who has had the best performance, I have a candidate in mind.
Okay, can we start with? Should we start with that one?
Sure.
Let's do it.
We're going to be bouncing back and forth. I would go with Andrew Painter of the Phillies, who I think he's got another start coming up in a day or two. But
yeah, I hope so.
This weekend, supposedly.
He's going to fall just short of qualifying, I think, for the minor league ERA title. But as of now, he's got a 1.17 ERA, 170 opponent average, 150 to 25 strikeout to walk ratio in 99 and two thirds innings. He got to double A in his first full pro season at age 19. I remember Forrest Whitley hasn't panned out too well, but when Forrest Whitley got to double A in his first season out of high school, I think Forrest Whitley was like the fourth pitcher this millennium behind like Chad Billingsley, or after Chad Billingsley, Clayton Kershaw and Zach Greinke. You don't often see a pitcher advance that far. But the thing that jumped out to me the most, I mean, Painter's dominated three levels. The stuff's been great. It's four good pitches. You know, he's not going to qualify for the ERA title. And he would lead the minors in opponent average as well if he qualified for that. But, and I think I mentioned this to Jason, so I will just pose this question to Jonathan. Jonathan, when is the last time a pitcher worked as much as Andrew Painter has, 99 and two-thirds innings, and had an ERA lower than 1.17 in the minor leagues.
Wow.
How long do you think it's been?
You could ask me too, because I forgot. And I did. And I wanted to ask you who it was, because you told me when, but you didn't.
Okay.
It's the benefit of, you know, being older and doing these kinds of things, Jason.
A clue that won't help you at all is I've spoken to this individual several times when he was a pitching coach in college baseball. He coached Josh Kallmenter. He coached Josh Kallmenter at Central Michigan.
So we're going back a ways. I haven't the slightest idea.
Okay, 1996.
Yeah,
Mike Villano had a 0.99 ERA.
Yeah, no wonder you didn't remember, Jason.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even remember the year.
He spent 9 years in the minors. Spent 9 years in the minors. Topped out in AAA, Central Michigan. I'm trying to think. Did they draft him out of Central Michigan? I don't remember that part of it. But he coached Central Michigan for a while as a pitching coach. And I would talk to him when we were doing our crazy deep Baseball America lists. And I was going probably like 20 deep in Michigan prospects every year. And then he was the head coach at Western Illinois for about two or three seasons.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, Andrew Painter. I think one of the last couple of weeks that I did the podcast with Sam, you know, I was kind of saying, I wrote it. I don't remember, but like, you know, we underranked him. But I remember saying at the time, you know, that I think he's going to end up being the best pitching prospect in baseball. And the only thing that will keep him from doing that is if he graduates too quickly. Cause suddenly it's a fast track, you know, and then in another universe, the fact that Mick Abel moved up to double A and pitched really well in his four starts there, Phillies fans would be all, you know, buzzed about, you know, the 2020 first rounder doing that. But Painter's been so much better that he's understandably and deservedly gotten all the attention. So,
well, let me ask you another question, Jonathan. If we were doing our top 100 from scratch today, just starting, you know, we're doing total revamp.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you rank Andrew Painter among minor league pitching prospects? How high?
Among pitching.
Pitching prospects, yes.
Two.
Yeah, I would as well. I'm right there with you, right behind Grayson Rodriguez.
Right behind Grayson Rodriguez. Just, you know, Rodriguez has done it, you know, at the higher level, but they're not that much separating the two of them.
Yeah, so currently we have Eury Pérez and Daniel Espino. Well, actually,
Taj Bradley,
Kyle Harrison, all ahead of Painter. And, I mean, you're saying this, Jim, as though that hasn't been done lately, but you guys just did that not too long ago. So,
yeah.
I mean, part of this is based on, I assume, his continued performance. He's been bumped up to double A, and I don't know exactly when that happened, but he's continued to prove himself.
Yeah, he's got a 32-2 strikeout-to-walk ratio in four double A starts.
And Reading, like, keep in mind, is a really hitting friendly ballpark. So he is not he's been better.
He's pitched three of his four games at home, too.
Yeah. And so, like, it does not, his two September starts, 12 innings, 11 hits, one run, one walk, and 18 strikeouts. It's just ridiculous. He seems to be getting stronger, which obviously bodes well for a guy who won't turn 20 until next April. He's already a big man, you know, but like he's going to add strength. I think he's going to be in that rotation by midseason next year in the big leagues.
Well, and they've been kind of stretching him out and extending him as the season has gone on as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim, when you first put this out there as the prospect performance of the year, I went to look at his game log and started scrolling down. It's like, you know, I know how good he's been, but I was seeing these 3-4, 3-2/3 inning starts. But that was the first half of the season. He's been 7-7, 6-6 1/3, 7-5 since August. So they've stretched him out. You know, I was just thinking, like, I'd kind of like to see it in longer stints.
And then he did it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think what they were doing was trying to make it so that they wouldn't use up all his innings. I mean, I'm sure his innings limit is right around 100. You know, he's going to probably pitch 105 or so. You know, and he pitched six innings last year coming out of high school in rookie ball. So I think that was just more a case of, hey, let's not have him, use up, you know, 60 innings in his first 10 starts, and then we'd have to shut him down. But the thing's also been impressive too is if you look at it, you know, I mean, there's small sample sizes because he hasn't pitched more than 40 innings in any of his three stops, but his control's gotten markedly better. Like he was 16 walks in 39 innings in low A, 7 walks in 37 innings in high A, and now 2 walks in 24 innings in double A. Like, he's gotten better and he's thrown more strikes. It hasn't been a case where, okay, he came out and just blew away hitters in single A, which he did. He struck out 69 guys in 38 2/3 innings, and then guys caught up to him at higher levels. So anyway, he would be my vote. I mean, there are a lot of impressive performances, but just his dominance at his age, he would get my vote, although there certainly are a number of outstanding performances.
Yeah, he touching on his control, Jim, he has not walked more than a batter in a game since his first start with Jersey Shore after being bumped up on June 12th, has walked either no batters or one batter in every game since then. And he just hasn't, like, he hasn't had a single start where he just got hit around. He hasn't allowed more than 3 earned runs in any game this year and has only done that a couple times. He's only given up more than 1 earned run, I think, 3 times all year. All right. So Andrew Painter, one candidate for top prospect performance of the year. Why don't we stick with pitchers, Jonathan? Or you don't have to. Just
don't tell me what to do.
Yeah, I said why don't.
That's true. It was more of a suggestion. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. That was testier than needed. I apologize.
All right, give us something.
I'm gonna go the offensive right now. We should make it clear that guys who were in the big leagues like all year were not being considered. So, you know, the big three, Adley, Julio, and Bobby Witt, were not guys like that. We're not considering. So these are, you know, performances largely in the minor leagues. And I bring all of this up, because Corbin Carroll is the guy I wanted to bring up, as one of the better offensive years. He's now doing it in the big leagues, obviously, but just in the minors alone, you know, across double A and triple A. And keep in mind, he hadn't played baseball since 2019. He played 7 games in 2021, but he missed the entire season. So we didn't know what we were going to get this year. And he hit across, you know, double A and triple A with an OPS over 1,000, 24 homers, 31 steals, drew a ton of walks, you know, did all the things very well, which is why he ended up in the big leagues. You know, the only thing that's a little hard, Jim, I think, with a guy like Carroll is he was hitting in Amarillo and then in Reno. So, like, I mean, I think he's going to hit everywhere. And obviously we moved him up to number 3 on our top 100. But that's the only reason, like, I paused for half a second. I'm not even looking at his home road splits. But I think he hits everywhere. But it is a system, the Diamondback system, where their double and triple A ballparks are hitter friendly.
That's a fair point, but I'm with you. I think he's going to hit. I'm not worried about that. You know, this was his age 21 season, so it's not like he was in Lancaster tearing up younger competition. So I think that's valid. Now, you know, if you want, I have his home road splits for you, counting the big leagues according to Baseball Reference. He's got a 1072 ops at home, but a 963 ops on the road. So there, and the power, 13 homers home and away. Almost
a 963 OPS is just not going to play.
Yeah, so it's I think it's all good.
All right, so Corbin Carroll started the season at number 19 on our top 100 prospects list. Going back to Andrew Painter, was not on the top 100 to start the year, has moved all the way up to number 25 now. Jim, on the offensive side?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I have 3 guys, none of whom Jonathan named. But, you know, if you want, like, I guess the first guy I'll bring up is Jackson Chourio, who, you know, I guess I would call him, if I was naming awards, Andrew Painter would be my performer of the year, and Jackson Chourio would be my breakout performer of the year. We knew who he was. You know, Sam Dykstra, who does our Brewers coverage, you know, had him on the list. I forget where. Coming into the year, but he'd only played in the Dominican Summer League, hadn't made his U.S. debut. Now he's finishing the year in Double A as an 18-year-old. You know, he's going into last night's game. I haven't looked at the stats this morning. He's hit 300, 20 homers, 14 steals, OPS of 916. Again, 18 years old. That's single A. That's high A. Now it's double A. And the tools are crazy too. I mean, he's got some of the best bat speed in the minors. I think it could be plus tools across the board, with the exception of his throwing arm, which is kind of fringy. But I mean, here's another guy who we didn't rank coming into the year. And that's one I don't feel bad about, because again, it was only Dominican Summer League. And now we have him as the number 11 prospect in the game. And you could, I mean, I think that the guys at the top of the list are all very solid prospects, but you can make a case for even pushing him a little higher than that. And, you know, last night in double A, he doubled and drove in three runs in his first game. So it's, I think, to me, he's the breakout performer of the year. Just a very, very spectacular season.
Yeah, he was number 10 in the Brewers system to start the year, and now number 11 over every system. You said you have three guys, Jim?
I did. I didn't know if you wanted me to cycle, or we were going to let Jonathan pick another guy, or how you wanted to do this.
Go ahead. Let's hear your let's hear a couple more guys, and then Jonathan, you have a pitcher for us?
Sure.
Okay.
And I don't have to break him down in great detail. But the other two guys would be Ellie De La Cruz, who, again, if we're going to put awards, he'd be my most exciting player of the year. And he kind of did what Churio did last year, coming over from the DSL, wowing everybody with his tools. He didn't finish a year in double A. And this year he's chasing a 30-30 season. Last I checked, he was hitting 300. His OPS was about 950, 28 homers, 43 steals, got to double A at age 20.
Yeah, three more steals last night.
Yeah, 46 now.
So now he's trying to become the minors' first 30-30 guy since Luis Robert and Kyle Tucker did it on the same day back in 2019. And then in I'm just Mr. Awards here. My if I gave Chorios the breakout performer, Von Braun would be the breakout out of nowhere performer. 23-year-old college player drafted in the 10th round last year, and he's leading the minors in hitting. He's second in the minors in OPS. He's got 23 homers, 44 steals. He's got crazy tools too. It's well above average raw power. It's plus speed. He's gotten to double A. I wish they promoted him a little more aggressively this year to age 24, because I don't quite have a read. He's barely played in double A, and he's been older than his competition. But like I said, the tools are crazy. And my favorite comp of the whole year on the pro side was when I was asking Giants farm director Kyle Haynes about him. I talked to him about him a couple times, and both times he was talking about how ripped Von Braun is, and he said he looks like he's Gabe Kapler's little brother or son. That's how ripped he is, which I love that comp. But Von Braun, for a guy, like, I knew who he was. I'm sure it's the same with you, Jonathan. I mean, I knew who he was because the Giants had taken him in the 10th round, and I do the Giants. And that was basically the extent of my knowledge. 10th round pick, Florida Southern, he's 23. Okay, whatever. You know, he played a little rookie ball last year and had good numbers, but it was rookie ball. And now I know a lot more about him. But he'd be my biggest breakout out of nowhere, if that's an award. So
Jim, you just named two of the four players who are currently at 20-40 seasons, 20 or more homers, 40 or more stolen bases, and De La Cruz and Von Braun. You know who the other two are?
I don't.
One you probably should know.
Wow.
Very highly rated prospect overall. The other is an organization mate of Von Braun.
Oh, is it Grant McCray?
It is. 23 homers, 43 stolen bases, last I checked. The other is a top 10 overall prospect. Is he in the top 10? that he's close.
Does Volpe have 40 steals?
He does. He has
40. Wow.
47 going into last night anyway.
And what's funny about Volpe is, you know, he got off to such a slow start and we got so much grief. Why is Volpe ranked so high? And he's basically been the guy he was last year ever since. Right. At a higher level.
I think it's why it's important to, you know, look at numbers in totality at the end. Because I think, you know, if he had been performing, excuse me, at where his numbers are right now, I don't think anybody would have been like, oh, what's wrong with him? What, you know, what's been going on with him? So it's he's figured it out.
It looks like De La Cruz, Volpe, both with a shot at being 20-50, which would be the first time that that's happened since an 18-year-old did it in 1995. Remember any?
It's like Andrew Jones.
There you go.
All right. Well, the 18 kind of gave it away.
Yeah.
Well, the 18 gave it away. Like I was trying to think. Like 18, and he had to be in full season ball. So.
Yeah, 25 homers and 56 stolen bases as an 18-year-old. Yeah, this has been a crazy year. I like to keep track of all the players who have 2020 seasons. We have data going back to 1958. There are already 21 players have 2020 seasons, which is more than there's ever been in a season going back to, again, 1958. The previous high had been 19. And it looks like we could have 30 or more players that end up with 2020 seasons.
And I think, you know, with Volpe especially, you know, keep in mind it's still, you know, it's easier to steal bases in A-ball because of the, you know, the limitations on pickoffs and things like that. You know, Volpe's done that upper level. So, you know, Ellie De La Cruz has stolen a bunch of bases in AA. He's actually gone 18 for 20 in AA. So it plays there as well. Some of the other, if you go and look at some of the, you know, stolen base leaders in the minor leagues, you have a bunch of guys with huge stolen base totals, but, you know, in A-ball, it's a little bit easier.
All right. Jonathan, give us a pitcher.
Well, I'm trying to decide between two.
You can pick them both.
And they're both named Gavin. I think I'm going to go with Gavin Stone. I always find it interesting when we sort of talk about this and sort of the combination of prospect status and the numbers they put up and trying to find the balance. And Stone is a guy who, well, he started the year in high A and ended in triple A and has pitched well in all three places, and combined ERA is just a touch above 1.5, batting average of 213. He is struck out over 12 per nine. The walks have been, you know, have been okay. I think he's gotten better as he's moved up. I know he's one of your guys, Jim, with the Dodgers, and we started talking about him when we were looking at our top 100 re-rank. And he's, you know, he's 23, and he, you know, he's gone from, all right, he's 23 in high A, okay, but then as he keeps moving up, now suddenly he's, you know, more age appropriate. So he's the one guy that stood out. The other Gavin is Gavin Williams of the Guardians, and he's got an ERA under 2, and he struck out on, you know, 11.7 per nine pitching across high A and double A in his first full season of pro ball after coming out of East Carolina as the Guardians first rounder last year, number 23 overall.
Yeah. Quick 2 cents on both those guys. They were both my draft guys too. You know, Stone was the second to last pick in the 5-round draft in 2020 out of Central Arkansas, where he'd been a closer. They moved him to starter during the pandemic season. He threw a no hitter in his last college start, and he's just another Dodgers development success story. He was 90-94 as a college starter. Now he sits 94 and touches 98 with a really low release point that makes it tough for hitters to get on top of his fastball. He barely used his changeup in college. Now it's a plus changeup that just dives at the plate. The Dodgers had him scrap his downer curveball. Now he's got a harder kind of slider cutter that they're adding some sweep to. So his stuff is different than it was. And then Gavin Williams, yeah, I think I've said this before on the podcast. I kind of felt like we kind of knew who Gavin Williams was. Like, he threw hard in high school. He touched 100 as a freshman in East Carolina, but he never threw strikes. He never spun a breaking ball. He never really got in the rotation. During the pandemic year, he had an injury that I think he broke a finger or something. So he barely pitched, and he wound up not getting drafted. And then he came back. And so at that point, I was like, okay, he's a reliever. You know, he's a little bit of a changeup, but it's all velocity. That's what it is. And then he came back his final college season, and all of a sudden he added power and shape to his curveball. He was throwing strikes. He was American Athletic Conference Pitcher of the Year. He almost beat Kumar Rocker. He dueled him inning in the Super Regionals, and it was really impressive. So it's crazy how far both those guys have come, and Williams has had no trouble keeping his stuff in pro ball. And the other pitcher I would throw out there, he hasn't been as dominant in terms of ERA, but Brandon Pfaadt with the Diamondbacks.
He was on my list too.
First pitcher since 2011 to strike out 200 batters in the season. He's got 202 and 155 in the third innings. He actually was among the strikeout leaders last year as well, his first full season. He was another fifth-round pick in the 2025 round draft out of Bellarmine, which is a Division II school in Kentucky. And, you know, he's got legit stuff. He can miss bats with a fastball, slider, and changeup. I think he might get one or two more starts, so it'll be interesting to see how high he can climb. The most strikeouts in the 2000s is 220 by Brandon Clausen. And if he gets two more starts, he struck out 11 his last time out, he could maybe top that. And, you know, it's funny, when he got to 200, I was slacking with Sam on Monday when I saw that. And we both made the comment that, you know, now when teams really limit how many innings guys pitched, I kind of felt like we were probably never going to see a 200 strikeout season in the minors again. But Brandon Pfaadt, 202 strikeouts and 155 in a third inning. So I'd give him a little special dispensation for that.
The Gavins, Williams and Stone, by the way, ranking second and fourth in all of minor league baseball in OPS against this year.
And then Stone leads the minors in ERA, I think.
Yeah, 156. All right, so that's a little taste of some of the top prospect performances of 2022. Jim, which honor did you bestow on Elly De La Cruz? Was it your most exciting?
Yes, I gave him most excited. Because he kind of broke out last year, so I can't see he broke out. I'd say he's the most exciting player in the minors, was my award.
All right, well, something else that's exciting.
These are my Emmys.
Jonathan and Sam had a chance to talk to Elly De La Cruz in what I believe was his English interview debut. And we have a chance to listen in on that coming up after this on the MLB Pipeline podcast.
We're very excited to welcome in to the MLB Pipeline podcast one of the most exciting prospects in all of baseball, Elly De La Cruz of the Cincinnati Reds. Elly, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, let's get right to it. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, Elly, is everyone talks about jumping to AA and that being the hardest jump, but you've managed it really well. What are the differences you've seen in the level, you know, in AA, and how have you adjusted to it?
For me, it's the same because it's baseball. If I play baseball, no matter where, it's the same. But at AA level, I've been learning to have more pacing in the plate.
And Elly, speaking of the way you hit, have you always switched it? I mean, people say you're better left-handed, but what do you do to work on both sides of the plate when you're switch hitting?
My routine is try to hit every day in the both side. I used to feel more comfortable in the left side, but now I feel comfortable in both sides.
Yeah, Sam, I remember seeing him at the Futures game, and you took swings from both sides of the plate, and that right-handed swing looked pretty good to me.
I feel comfortable with both sides now.
That's great. Now, I live in Pittsburgh, and so I can't help but think about O'Neill Cruz when I see you play, and others talk about him as well when they're talking about you. What do you think about that comparison? Do you like to watch how he plays?
Yeah, I like watching him play because he's so good, and he's the tallest shortstop I haven't seen, and he is a perfect example. He's taller and I'm taller too. I can play shortstop too.
Yeah, it's good to have him as kind of an example in the big leagues. Now being at AA, you are close to the big leagues. What do you feel like you need to work on to be ready for the big leagues, specifically when it comes to your approach at the plate?
I think I'm ready to go to the big league now. My approach will be the same. Be patient on the player and wait for my pitch.
You mentioned that you've been working on that approach, you know, especially in Double A. Is that, you know, is that what you, how you would describe your approach? You know, there's power. There are a lot of strikeouts. How would you describe your approach at the plate?
My focus is the same in every AB. I try to hit the ball hard every time. Nobody can catch that ball when I hit.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, given some of the exit velocities we've seen out of you. And, you know, because of your size, you were talking about this before with O'Neill Cruz. Everybody wants to move you off shortstop. There's talk about third base, some center field. How much do you want to prove people wrong and stay at short?
Definitely those people wrong. I can play shortstop in the big league. He in the big league now. I can play shortstop in the big league.
Now, Sam talked a little bit about, you know, your exit velocities, and you've hit some of the longest home runs in the minors. How quickly do you know that a ball you've hit is gone? Do you know right away?
Yeah. When I hit the ball high in the air, I know right away.
And speaking of home run distance, hitting balls quickly and you know right away, how much do you pay attention to analytics, things like home run distance and exit velocity? Or what do you look at to really determine your success?
I check out the number in the exit below, and I try to hit the ball hard every time.
Simple approach. I like it. You say that you want to prove to everyone you can play shortstop. There are a lot of shortstops in the Red system now, especially after the trade. You've got Noel V. Marte. You've got Edwin Arroyo. Now, how do you feel now having all those shortstops in this Reds organization with you?
I feel good the same because I don't pay attention to the other guys. I just do my job and enjoy the game.
And when you all get to the big leagues, they can play second base and third, and you can play shortstop?
Yeah.
All right, Ellie. I want to thank you very much for joining us. You've had an amazing season so far. Good luck finishing it off, and we'll see you in the big league soon.
See you in the big leagues.
All right. Thanks very much to Ellie De La Cruz for joining us and for doing that interview in English with us. I said before that was his English language interview debut. But actually, Jonathan, you pointed out it's actually his second. He had just done his first maybe a couple days earlier. But yeah, give him credit for doing that. And you guys put him on the hot seat.
Oh, yeah, we really
grilled him.
We really fired away with some difficult questions. But yeah, it was and it's a different thing. I think the English interview he did previously was, you know, in person at the ballpark. That's a whole different thing than doing something over, you know, a recording and things of that nature. So considering how young he is and he was excited to be able to do it in English. And, you know, I think that. It sounds silly, but, you know, it speaks to, you know, who he wants to be. Like, I always have admiration for guys who, you know, work on multiple languages. I barely have mastered one. And but his understanding that to become the player he wants to be, like being able to communicate in English will go a long way. It's pretty impressive. You know, almost as impressive as his ridiculous tools.
Yeah, Jim, you said tool for tool, the most exciting prospect in baseball.
Correct.
Yeah. Who are some guys? I mean, I know the, you know, the O'Neill Cruz comp is there and inevitable, but who are some guys who have had tools this loud across the board? Is there anyone else he reminds you of, either as a player or just the tools specifically?
I keep coming back to O'Neill Cruz just because of the size. He's not quite as tall as O'Neill, but because of the size and the tools. I mean, that's the obvious comparison to me. I think he's got, you know, I mean, not that O'Neill Cruz can't play shortstop, But I think Ellie De La Cruz probably has a little bit better chance than O'Neill Cruz to play shortstop. But that's the one I keep coming back to.
Yeah, and he likes that comp too, as we just heard. So it's not one that he shies away from. He likes watching O'Neill Cruz, you know. And De La Cruz is a switch hitter, mind you. Granted, he's better from the left side or a little more comfortable from the right side, but he's been fine right-handed. Obviously not as many reps from that side, but he works on both. You know, as he said, the one thing that he needs to work on is his approach at the plate, and he's working on it. And has gotten better. So it's clearly an understanding of what he needs to be ready for the big leagues. And kind of like O'Neill Cruz, he wants to stay at shortstop and wants to prove people who are ready to put him someplace else, you know, as he said. So really exciting year from him. And another guy, I think we're going to see him maybe next year in the big leagues at some point at a very, very young age. So really, really exciting to see what happens next for him after a very, very good year that got him to double A.
You were mentioning other guys, Jason. I mean, his tools are somewhat similar. I mean, he's bigger physically, but his tools are somewhat similar to Bobby Witt Jr.'s.
Interesting. Yeah, he's...
I think that's fair. You put aside sort of body type and just think about tool for tool. I like that one.
I mean, but granted, Bobby Witt Jr. is like 6'1", and Ellie De La Cruz is 6'5". But like from just a tool standpoint at shortstop, I mean, that's who he's similar to as well.
All right. Again, thanks to Ellie for joining us on the podcast. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to look ahead to the 2023 draft class and take a look at some of the top prospects from the high school and college ranks. That's coming up next on the MLB Pipeline podcast. Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline podcast. Jason Ratliff, Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo. We want to talk about the 2023 draft class now. We are solidly looking ahead to that. We're nearly a year away, but we've already seen some of these players in some showcases at the high school All-American game. We saw a lot of the top high school prospects for 2023. The end of the regular season is coming up, and normally we then know the draft order. Won't exactly be the case this year because of the newly instituted draft lottery. So there will be some wrinkles, but we'll at least have an idea then of what the draft order will be. Jonathan, let's start on the high school side. As mentioned earlier on the episode here, you've already put together a list of the top high school prospects for 2023. Give us some names that we should be paying attention to starting now.
Yeah, I think the guy who has been at the top and continues to be at the top is Max Clark, the outfielder from Franklin High School in Indiana. It's been kind of interesting because from a tool standpoint, it's not even close. He has not had a great summer sort of production-wise, although last I checked, he was hitting pretty well for Team USA. But the tools are just so good. He has all five of them. One of the things that sort of stood out, I kind of checked in with some of the coaches during PDP League, because he's got some personality. There's we'll say cockiness, a little swag, and sometimes you wonder, like, is he all tools? Is it all flash? But the coaches are former big leaguers, loved his attention to detail, how he acted as a teammate. How he was willing to learn. He's constantly working on his swing. So I think what we're seeing now from Team USA comes after in the culmination of work he's done all summer to try to refine his swing. So he's the guy right at the top. And typically when you talk about Max Clark, right behind him, you talk about Walker Jenkins, who is from North Carolina, also an outfielder. He had a hamate injury, so you didn't really get to see the real Walker Jenkins for most of the summer. But we're talking about the chance to be a plus hitter with plus power, probably a right fielder when all is said and done. So those are the the top two hitters. And then you've got Travis Sikora on the mound, a 6-foot right-hander from Texas. Jim, you're going to be busy next year. These are all your guys. But up to the upper 90s, he's got a really good upper 80s slider, a solid splitter. And then Aiden Miller, who we all saw in Los Angeles, because he won MVP honors in the high school All-American game. And then the home run derby, he's number five as a hitter. Blake Mitchell is a two-way guy, ahead of Blake, Travis Sikora. I skipped over him. I think most scouts like him better as a catcher, even though he's, up to 95 off the mound, but I think he's got a chance to be an offensive force behind the plate. That's the top five. I'll throw out one more arm, Thomas White, who's from Massachusetts and hadn't been seen much, but threw well in the PDP league and East Coast Pro Showcase, got to pick his spots. But a 6'5 lefty with really, really good stuff in the fastball, really good breaking ball, and decent changeup as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, we got to see a decent amount of these guys in Los Angeles. You know, as you mentioned, Jonathan, I mean, Aiden Miller, every time we saw him that weekend, he was doing something else and had a great weekend. And I feel like he's boosted his stock a little bit. Like he was considered, I felt like coming into the summer, just from talking to guys, potential first rounder, back half of the first round, but now it seems like he's pushed himself into, you know, at least as of now, into the top half of the first round.
I think he's now seen as one of the better high school hitters in the class.
Yeah, and I think these other guys were kind of big names coming in, and it seems like he's the guy who's maybe helped himself at least at the top of the list the most this summer.
Okay, and on the college side, Jim, I think you said that the top seven overall is pretty clear cut.
Yeah, I'm still working on the list. I don't have the order locked in, but yeah, the top seven. I think the top seven college players. You've got six hitters and you've got one pitcher. You've got three outfielders, all from the SEC. Dylan Cruz from LSU, who was a potential high round pick out of high school . And then he pulled out of the draft. I don't think he was going to go quite as high as he wanted, so he pulled himself out of the draft. But he's coming off a really good year for LSU. He might have the most power of any of these guys. You've got Wyatt Langford of Florida, who had a breakout year with the Gators last year, hit 26 homers. And then you've got Enrique Bradfield Jr., who Jonathan and I both remember from the first PDP league, which I guess was 2019?
Yep.
And he's the fastest player. So those are your three outfielders. Then you've got three shortstops. You've got Jacob Gonzalez at Mississippi, who won the College World Series last year. Good defensive player. He's probably more power over hit. You've got Jacob Wilson, who's the son of former big leaguer Jack Wilson, who's at Grand Canyon. And he's probably the best pure hitter of any of these guys. He struck out seven times the entire season last year, and he had a good summer. I misspoke. Brayden Taylor is really a third baseman. He's not a shortstop. And he might be a better all-around hitter than Jacob Wilson and Jacob Gonzalez, but not quite as much defensive value because he's really a third baseman. And then the one pitcher would be Chase Dollander, out of Tennessee. Georgia Southern transfer last year, had a huge sophomore year for the Volunteers. He's up to, upper 90s with the fastball. He's got two good breaking balls. He's got an above average changeup. He throws a ton of strikes. I think if Chase Dollander was draft eligible in 2022, he would have been the first college pitcher taken. He was in a year where we had so many pitchers hurt or suspended or, whatever, just not performing. I think Chase Dollander would have been the guy that everybody was hoping would emerge in 2022. So I think that's your top seven.
I had a sort of just a general question because I remember talking to scouts. I think it was sort of heading into the 2022 draft. And I don't, I haven't done much digging. You're doing the college guys, but the Cape Cod League is for a long time has been kind of, the elite college league. It still is the best one. You get to see them hit with wood. It's good competition. But something is sort of stuck in my head, Jim, and I'm wondering if you got this at all. Some scouts were telling me that the pitching just hasn't been good. The level of competition isn't quite as good as it used to be, and that perhaps using the Cape as that measuring stick isn't as useful as it used to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's cyclical. I think college pitching has been down the last couple of years. I mean, I think we could probably trace some of that to the pandemic, sure, and guys losing a year of development. And also, you know, I think that's a reason we saw a lot of guys hurt last year, is guys went from barely pitching in 2020 to pitching normal workloads in 2021, and a lot of guys broke down. But I still, even if the pitching isn't as good as it has been in the past, I think that's more reflective of college baseball than the Cape's not getting a lot of the best pitchers. I still think most of the best pitchers who are pitching summer ball, and a lot of guys do take the summer off, but most of the best guys who are pitching summer ball are pitching in the Cape. And I still think it does matter. You know, like I mentioned, Jacob Wilson, who played a little bit in the Cape. Again, to see a guy from Grand Canyon against, you know, Power 5 competition, I do think that matters. I do think the wood bats still matter. So I do think you maybe take it with a little bit of a grain of salt, like, okay, the pitching wasn't as good. But I think, honestly, we could have said the same thing last year, and I think we talked about in the podcast too. The pitching was not as good in college baseball last year.
Right.
And so you had all these these guys putting up huge offensive numbers, like in the SEC or what have you. And, you know, SEC pitching, you know, all the best SEC pitchers seemed like they were hurt last year. So, like, we even made that same comment, like, okay, you know, this guy's tearing up the SEC, but, you know, like, Jacob Berry had a really good SEC season. But does it matter as much? Because the pitching isn't as good. So I to me, the Cape matters as much as it ever did. But I just think maybe you take at any level the hitting performances with a little bit of a grain of salt, because the pitching just seems like it hasn't been the same since the pandemic.
Fair.
And I was going to just throw out real quick, like, I have only got, I think, there's only going to be about three pitchers in my top 15 college prospects going into next year.
Yeah, the high school pitching crop, I think, is a little bit better. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out as we forge ahead.
So Jonathan's story on the top high school draft prospects for 2023 is already up on MLB.com/pipeline. Jim's story on the top college prospects will be up next week, so check that out there as well. Thanks to Jonathan M. in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, for that question, at Jonathan Mayo on Twitter. And we have another question, this one from Kyle Weatherly, at Kyle Weatherly 6 on Twitter. Kyle says, currently there are only two first base prospects in the top 100, so I was wondering, is it more difficult for someone like Tommy White, first base only prospect who should be in the draft class of 2024, to make the list when he's drafted? Torque made it, but he was a first base / third base prospect, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true with Torque, although I think if Torque had been a first base only, and we kind of felt he was going to wind up at first base, we still would have ranked him very highly. It's just, I think, guys, it comes down to just the bar is so much higher at first base. You have to perform offensively at a high standard because you aren't really contributing much usually in terms of defense or base running. So you have to have an impact bat, and it's hard. You know, Tristan Casas and Tyler Soderstrom are the only first baseman on the top 100 right now. And Soderstrom was a catcher coming into the year, although he wasn't a lock to stay there. I think we've talked about, I don't know if he'll make the list before the end of the season, Kyle Manzardo, the Rays, who Jonathan has touted because he was one of his draft guys last year, is actually leading the minors in ops. He's battling Vaughn Brown, who we talked about at the top of the podcast. But there just aren't that many first basemen. Like, we have trouble coming up with 10 a lot of times, Jonathan, don't we, for the top 10 first base list, because I think there's only, I'm doing this off the top of my head, like 20 or so first basemen out of the 900 players on top 30 lists.
Yeah, they're not many. And I think because of that pressure to hit for the position, that's all you really are going to look at. And not that many guys have stepped up and had good years. Now, Kyle Manzardo, it's funny, I almost brought him up in that segment about top performers, just because from a performance standpoint, and, you know, he was a college performer, had a very, very good year at Washington State in 2021, ended up going in the second round to the Rays last year. But he was, you know, he did hit 11 homers with Washington State last year, but it was, you know, hit more hit than power. So was he going to be one of these guys who hit for average? But the power started to show up. You know, he's made it up to Double A. So he's a guy who I think is sort of on the cusp of breaking through into that group of top 100 first basemen just because of how well he's performed. And, you know, now that he's done it, you know, in double A especially. So he's one we're looking at, but they are few and far between. You know, Jim, I agree with you that it is hard. Like, we're grateful that Tyler Soderstrom ended up playing more games, a lot more at first base, because we could shift him over there, and catching is so much deeper in the minor leagues right now that made it a little bit easier to fill out that list. But it's tough. Now, Tommy White, we'll have to see. He's, you know, we were all excited about what he did last year. We're going to have to wait another 2 years. If he does what he did as a freshman for another 2 years, then I think he has a chance to be not Spencer Torkelson level, maybe, but a guy who will be highly ranked and maybe more highly ranked coming out of the draft than any first base only prospect that we've had in quite some time.
Well, and that said, I mean, I think the bar is going to be higher for Tommy White too. You know, he's at LSU now. He's at NC State as a freshman. He spent most of his freshman year as a DH. He played 13 games at first, 8 at third, but mostly as a DH. So you're talking about, I mean, he's all that. Like Torkelson had a chance to play third. I think Torkelson can be a average to solid first baseman. Tommy White, you're kind of hoping that maybe he can be an average first baseman. So that bar is going to be even higher for him.
A little bit of historical context. Since we started ranking prospects in 2004, it was top 50 overall back then. There have been 2,500 players ranked. How many do you think have been first basemen?
2,500 on the top 100? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. There have been 30 lists dating back to 2004, both preseason and midseason. Top 50 up until 2014, then expanded to top 100.
And we're saying different players, like not.
No, not even different, just total.
Oh, how many times has a first baseman been ranked?
On 30 lists, you're saying?
Yep.
I'll say 90.
Pretty close.
Probably high.
Barely. 78. So approximately 3%.
I don't even get to guess. Jeez.
I knew you knew.
Sure, I had the exact amount right here written on my notebook right here.
How about the highest ranked first base prospects in the history of our rankings? Torkelson, we talked about. He's the highest ranked first base prospect ever. Other top 10 overall prospects were first basemen.
Top 10.
Got any?
And they were first baseman at the time.
Yes. Were ranked as first baseman at the time.
Top 10. Wow. The,
how the many next, are there?
The next highest ranked was back in 2005. And he was number 5 overall.
Wow.
The Angels.
Did Andrew Vaughn get pretty high?
Andrew Vaughn was pretty high. He was a top 10 guy. Was he not?
Let's see. Vaughn.
I know he wasn't 2005.
Number 14.
2005 was Casey Kochman.
Correct. other top 10 overall prospects who were first base prospects include Eric Hosmer.
Mm. Prince Fielder, was he ever top 10?
Prince Fielder, okay. Indeed. Hosmer was number 8 in 2011. Justin Smoke was number 9 in 2010. And Prince Fielder was number 10 in 2005. So, yeah, a bit of a history of first base prospects on the top of the prospects list.
I was waiting for you to drop a Jonathan Singleton on us.
I don't know that he ever got into the – let's see.
He was ranked, but I don't think he was ever top 10.
Yeah, that might take a little.
Do we count what about Brendan McKay? Does that count?
Singleton was number 27 at his peak in 2013. All right. Well, thanks very much to Kyle Weatherly for that question. And thanks to everybody for listening. That's going to do it for this week's episode of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.